Blog Talk Radio.
Right, the boys are back in town.
Hello.
The band is back together.
Hey.
And, yes, sir.
Hello.
Hello. You there, Bobby?
Oh, hey, Smitty. I'm good.
Who are you talking to, Bobby?
Got your package. I'll get it done for you this weekend. I got it. How many songs is on that cassette? Is it an album or what is it?
Jerry, you hearing this?
Yes, sir.
Who's he talking
okay.
to?
All right. No, I didn't.
Did my music play?
Yeah, it wasn't real clear. I thought I was listening to a rap station.
Yeah.
It was Thin Lizzy. The boys
yeah,
are back.
They did. I think all they did was a graveside for. But, yeah, it
Bobby
was pretty quick. When she went, they did it like a couple days later. I got it. I will get it. I'll get it done and get it back in the mail to you probably Monday or Tuesday. You're welcome, sir.
Bye.
Hello.
Hey.
Yeah.
Sorry.
I'm here.
It's all right.
Me too. Are we there? All there?
We're all here.
Okay. I'm sorry. The phone rang. I've got Charlie Smith's daughter is in surgery as we speak.
Charlene?
Yes. Not sure what's going on, but they had to put her in the hospital yesterday and they're doing surgery. And Smitty's supposed to call me as soon as he hears something. And I seen
okay.
Smith pop up and I thought that was him, so I laid the phone down and answered. But it was Curtis Smith. You know, all them Smith
okay.
boys about the same anyway. But I'm sorry I left you hanging.
That's all right. No problem.
By the way, who is
this?
I thought I was calling in to Peach State Pandemonium.
This is, and as
oh,
I was saying
no,
before that the band is back together. It's Thursday, and it's Peach State Pandemonium. And this is Michael Norris, and as always, I'm joined by my partners in crime, Gentleman Jerry Oates and beautiful Bobby Simmons. What are you guys up to this evening, other than you talking to the Smith family, Bobby?
I'm up to my eyeballs and stuff, man. It's been one of them weeks, but I'm doing good. I am doing good.
I guarantee you, no matter what you've been through, your week has been better than mine.
Oh, I'm sure. I'm sure.
I was just telling Jerry before we went on the air, the mortgage company's trying to foreclose on a burned-down house. So, I'm about ready to throw it up in the air and let them all have it and just go back to chasing elephants.
I understand.
But, hopefully I'll meet with my attorney tomorrow afternoon and hopefully I'll know something as to when I can go back to work and I can call the circus and say I'm ready, give me a start date, give me a town, and I'm going to hit the road. But I won't know until I talk to her tomorrow. Right now we're fighting with Wells Fargo. They don't want to talk to either one of us because I don't exist, according to them. So we'll see. I know what I'm going to do. And when I get all this is done, everything is settled, and I've got nobody else holding anything over my head, I'm going to sit down and write about 3.5 pages on Facebook where everybody in the world can read it, and I'm going to name names as to who has been difficult to work with through this, who's been helpful, who hasn't, so it'll be a guide for everybody. And I'm telling everybody right now, I'm telling both of you, because I love you guys and I care about you, and I'm telling everybody that listens to us, if you've got elderly parents, make sure they have a will. And make sure that will is in a safety deposit box, that it is notarized, legalized, every kind of eyes there can be. put it in the safety deposit box and not on the shelf and on Aunt Bessie's book, you know, nook over here, because I don't want anybody to ever go through what I am going through right now. You know, if you're older and you've got grown kids, make sure that they are on, somebody is on your bank account, make some, sure somebody is on a will somewhere and it's locked away safe. So if something happens like this, somebody's not left holding the bag. And I think my bag is about the size of the Gulf of Mexico right now, because that's how big a bag I've been left holding. And I just, as soon as I head out on the road, I am stopping in Atlanta, and all my business will be taken care of. My daughter will be on everything. I will have a will and a safety deposit box, and I won't, she will not have to worry about this. I
Mike,
may even make it all
bad.
For them. To,
you're breaking up bad, man.
Sorry. Is that better?
I got the guy on my end.
Huh?
I got him okay on this end.
Oh,
maybe this really is
about.
Pandemonium.
Yeah, it is pandemonium. But anyway.
Well, want to make sure you got this right now. When you come to do the will and everything, it's OATES and SIMMONS. I just want to make sure you get the spelling right,
okay,
so we don't have any difficulty.
I'll leave a pair of shoes to each of you, because that's about all I got left. But anyway, we're going to have a great show tonight. Our two of our favorite guests are going to be with us. Bill Bowman and Joe Turner are going to join us, and we're going to do something a little bit different. I know we try and mainly talk about the Georgia territory, but the two of them and Jerry and Bobby, you spent a little bit of time back and forth there in the Charlotte territory. And I want to talk about the Charlotte territory, the differences between the old man and the son and how that, because everybody talks, that ever worked in Charlotte, it's their favorite territory. They got paid well there. The trips were bad, but they were worth it. So I just want to talk about the Charlotte territory tonight. So unless you guys have something you want to talk about.
I'm just glad to hear your voice, Bubba. Glad you're back. Bo did a heck of a job. I think we need to give Bo a shout out.
I want to thank Bo for all the weeks that he covered for me, and I want to thank Rich Tate, the boss, for covering for me for that 1 week. And I listened to most of the shows that my computer would allow me to do. And I'm going to preface this by saying if we lose me tonight, I don't think we should, but my computer overheats and will shut down every once in a while. So if it does, I think we can still be on the air. I just won't be able to manipulate the switchboard, but until I sign back on. But I think we'll be okay. But I want to take us a quick break and get at least Bill Bowman on the line with us, because he's already called in, and when Joe calls in, we'll get him on the line as well. So let's take a quick break, pay a few bills, and we'll be right back.
Wrestling fans, Anarchy Wrestling television tapings are the second and fourth Saturdays of every month at 4236 Level Grove Road in Cornelia, Georgia. For more information on Anarchy Wrestling and on the shows, to watch the television product and a whole lot more, go to anarchy-wrestling.net. That's Anarchy Wrestling, the second and fourth Saturdays of every month in Cornelia, Georgia.
If you're hurt, get the money you deserve. If you're in pain, get the money you deserve. At Terry and Peterman, we're personal injury attorneys who take a professional, thorough approach to your accident and injury claims. Don't call some long-distance law firm or satellite office. Don't trust your claim to just anyone. For a free consultation, call the law office of Terry and Peterman today, 229-247-0386, or go online at www.terryandpeterman.com. The law offices of Terry and Peterman, making things right.
Whether you're having an autograph session, personal appearance, or live event, we got just the person you need to contact for all of those needs. SBI Bookings is home of some of the best stars in the wrestling industry today. They provide you with the best talent this business has to offer, from Kevin Nash, Larry Zbysko, Scott Steiner, and many, many more. So who will you contact next time you're planning an event? The men of SBI Bookings. Check them out at sbibookings.com.
Do you remember Tommy Rich? What about Ray Gunkel or Gordon Solie? Can't get those nasty Anderson brothers out of your head? Well, you can catch them again at GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com. Who was on the first card you attended? Who was it under that mask? Remember the first Omni Spectacular or the big main events at the Bell Auditorium? What happened in Columbus on my birthday? Find out at GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com. Whether you want to get back some of your past, or maybe you just want to find pro wrestling in your area, check out GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com.
We're back. Terry, is it any better on your end now? I saw you hung up and called back in. Is it any better?
Yeah, I just cut off. Yeah, I'm good now.
Okay. Because listening to the commercial, it's cracking up on my phone, so maybe it's my phone. Maybe it's tired of Mobile, too. But anyway, we're going to get one of our guests on right now who hasn't been on with us for a while, but we're glad to welcome him back. My papa, Bill Bowman. Are you there, Bill?
I'm here. Thank you.
Good. We're still waiting on Joe, but we can talk about him till he gets on with us. Tell us some Joe Turner stories.
Really?
You don't know any, do you? Joe was always a nice gentleman the whole time you guys traveled, didn't he?
Yes, he was a class act all the time, just like myself.
I think Jerry just fainted.
I just pointed back around.
May I say hello to the Oaks there?
Yes, you may.
How are you, sir?
Fine. I am doing great, sir. How are your knees, sir?
They're doing wonderful. I appreciate you asking. They're doing great.
Well I was just curious about that.
And he's Bobby making a Kevin, comeback, Bill. Jerry's yes. Next month, Jerry's going to be somewhere in a weed eater match.
That's I went and bought me an Echo weed eater.
There you go.
Well, that's good.
My wife came up with the idea to have a pressure washer match.
That will be
and we're going to sell rain suits at the gimmick table.
Well, don't think that won't be hard.
Already has them.
Yeah, I'm sure he does.
Really? Mr. Simmons.
Yes, sir.
And your beautiful wife.
She's doing fairly well. She's her lungs are giving her some problems, but the arthritis in the bottom of her lungs is kind of acting up. But other than that, she's doing okay.
Well, great. I'm glad to hear that. I want to say that you're one of the class acts I have ever been around, and I just appreciate you being my friend.
Oh.
And a friend of Mike Norris, a double barrel friend of his, and doing all the fine things that you've done for him.
Oh, please, thank you. I appreciate it.
How much money did you slip at him at the last slip to him at the last reunion?
Listen, man.
He sent me a check.
You want to borrow some money?
Me and Bill are part of the Mutual Admiration Society. I have very few wrestling pictures in my house, but I have a picture of me and Bill Bowman sitting in my dining room. So that was made by his lovely bride in Las Vegas. So that sits right in my dining room there. So
Go ahead, Bill.
I know. I say I appreciate that, Bobby.
I got one of Bill Bowman and Bill White I took in March. I'll send that to you. You can put that in your house.
That'd be nice. Listen, Charlie Lady's cell phone down out in Vegas, and Bill White was standing close, and I took his phone and made a picture of Bill White, a real close-up, and I put that on Charlie's phone, so every time he opened his phone, Bill White was staring at him.
Oh, man.
You know, I talked to Charlie this evening, and he didn't say anything, you know, about her being operated on, and but I'm concerned. So, Bobby, let us know, please.
I'll let you know. I told him to call me on my cell phone. I got both of them laying right here beside me, so he's supposed to call me. But he told me
all
that
right.
It was gonna surgery was gonna take about an hour and a half, and that a couple hours in recovery. But he'd call me as soon as he knew something.
Okay, all righty.
Keep our fingers. Charlene's a good person. She's for those of you who have not met Charlie's daughter, Charlene is you talk about a chip off the old block. Well, I've never met any of his other kids, but I've known Charlene for several years now. And if that's not Charlie Smith, not physically, but Charlie Smith's personality all over again, I'll eat my hat. She's a character just like he is, and just a wonderful person.
Double barrel.
Yep.
And let's also just a little bit of news. Donnie Bass, who I don't know if any of you guys ever worked with Don. He never traveled much. He was in Tennessee, he was in Mobile, and he was in Tampa. I think that's about the only places he ever worked. But he evidently had a stroke earlier in the week, but he's doing well now. As far as I know, he's still in the hospital, but he's out of any kind of danger and things. So let's keep him in our thoughts and prayers as well. So.
Has Joe made an appearance yet?
No, sir. He hadn't shown up yet, so you can take all the shots you want to. There he is. I'm speaking of the devil. Hold on just a second. Mr. Turner, how are you this evening?
Yes, sir. Doing great. How about you?
Doing wonderful. Got Bill and Bobby, Jerry, and I on the line. We're going to talk about Charlotte tonight.
You are.
And, yeah. I know all you guys worked up in the Charlotte territory at different times. You and Bill mainly worked for the old man, and Jerry, and I guess Bobby, the trips you made up there were for Junior.
Yep.
As opposed to Jim Crockett Sr. And I know the territory's changed. Back in your guys' days, it was mainly a tag team territory. I guess that was the time frame that Becker and Weaver and I guess Rip Hawk were doing the booking.
Mm-hmm.
So, now, how many towns did they normally run tonight? Four or five?
About five, I think.
Back in the time, yes. I imagine so. It was at least that. And if you went in there and worked as a general practitioner, you would make a good living. Because they'd keep you busy all the time. It was working for Mr. Crockett was totally different. You went into the office, you were dressed, you were not in slides or flip flops or anything like that. But you went in there and he was a businessman. And it was a great honor for me to go in there. And then when I got to know Mr. Crockett a little bit, he took us into the other room. And I said, well, what is this? And here was a complete operation where they made fishing lures. And they had all kind of fishing lures from one end of the place to the other end of the place. And that was a big business. And that's the first territory that Joe and I worked in that they had a separate room with lockers in it, and that's where you would do interviews, and which was interesting. Joseph, go ahead.
Where you want me to go?
I don't know.
He's probably been telling you where to go for years, and you just won't listen.
I know. I got that part right. I'm glad you guys realize that.
So. Well, I was talking to Bo James this afternoon, getting a little bit of history. Crockett was actually from Kingsport, or the old man, Jim Crockett Sr., was actually from Kingsport.
Yeah.
And he started in the wrestling business in Tennessee. There was a gentleman that was owning an appliance store, and he started his own promotion there with the wrestling, and Jim Crockett Sr. was his best salesman, so he put him in charge of the, you know, the advertising and putting posters out and stuff like that, and he did so well there. When they wound up having an opening in Charlotte, they sent him over there, and he wound up owning the whole thing. But at one time, let's see, the Charlotte territory, I know, was in both Carolinas, the Virginias, West Virginia, parts of Kentucky, part of Tennessee. So that was a big territory. And it before it was over with, it stretched down into Savannah, Georgia. When did they start running Savannah, Jerry? Out of the Charlotte territory. Do you know?
When we were up in 78, we were coming to Savannah. So I know
78. You know, Mr. Crockett, when he started promoting over there and he took over the territory, he was booking out of his restaurant, out of the kitchen. He had a
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm. And he went from there.
Of course, they owned, at one point, they owned a minor league baseball team, the Charlotte O's.
Yeah. Well, we were there when they got that. Yeah, we were there when they got that. But like Bill said, he was strictly a businessman, and he was talking business. Most of the time he'd call you Mr. Turner, Mr. Bowman. But you could tell when he's just going to cut up a little bit. He called Joe or Bill. So you could distinguish what mood he was in. But he's kind of fun to be around, too. He had me in his office one time, and nobody else was there. And I'm sitting down at his desk, and he had to go to the bathroom and take a leak. Anyway, his phone kept ringing. And he says, "Turn and catch my phone." I said, "I don't work in the office." "Turn and catch my phone, man." I said, "I'm not one of your stooges." He comes in there, and he says, "You should have called my phone. You could have cost me $90,000 not answering that phone." But he actually did not like the suck-ups. I mean, he told me, he said, "I had to put up with him, but I don't like it too much."
Well, who was booking that territory the bulk of the time you guys were there?
George Becker and Rip Hawk, and John Ringman helped a lot.
I love that man.
Son-in-law. I did too.
I love John Ringman.
Yeah. Also, he was earmarked to be the heir apparent, wasn't he, John Ringman? Wasn't he the one that the business would have gone to?
Yeah, well, I don't know if I were just torn or not, but I guess it'd be all right. Whenever he, Mr. Crockett in his will had it for John Ringman to run the whole thing.
Yeah. Because
he knew he was capable of doing it. So John Ringman took over, went in and sat behind Crockett's desk. And then Jim Jr. there, he got to where he'd get there early just to go sit behind the desk. So then they started watching Ringley to see what if he was doing anything wrong. So they get Jim was Junior. I was looking to see if there's some way he can get rid of him. And so he catch him talking to girls and all that, and he went and told his wife and all enough stories that she left him. And he done all that just so he could take over the territory.
I believe that.
Yeah. Yes, sir. You know, everybody in that family could dress up real nice, and he could put a $500 suit on and look like he'd come out of Goodwill. That ain't no joke. That man just couldn't make his suit look expensive, you know.
Who are you talking about, Junior?
Yeah, Junior.
Yeah, you know, when they made him president of the NWA, I had some dealings with him. I mean, I say I had dealings with him. I was around him more. I didn't know him. I still don't know him. But he was one of those people that my instincts told me not to trust him.
Yeah.
I didn't. you know, he was more concerned with how often he could go to Club Med than he was, you know, what he was doing.
Yeah. But see, he didn't have any respect for the boys. And now when his brother David was going to start wrestling, Mr. Crockett called me in the office and asked me, he said, would you mind working with David? He wants to work. And I said, no, sir, I don't mind. And I said, why'd you pick me? He said, well, Joe, he says, I don't know if they would or not. He says, being my son, to my mother guys might would hurt him. And I said, well, I said, I hope I wouldn't have to do that. And he said, now, wait a minute, I'm going to tell you this right now. If he gets cute out there, you got to do what you got to do. And I'm not looking for you to do any different. So anyway, we worked battle royals and we worked against each other, and he's doing pretty good. But anyway, what I was getting at, Junior told him, he says, well, man, you above that. What are you doing wanting to wrestle? You above that. And I thought right then, he has no respect for what makes him a living.
No, he made him millions of dollars.
Yeah. Well, anyway, I ended up with wrestling him just about every night. And one night in the battle royal, somebody threw me face first on the turnbuckle. And he's already potatoed me two or three times. He's having such a good time out there, what it was, and he didn't know how to relax with it, you know. Then he come up in the air, man, looked like Tarzan flying through the trees. It kneed me right in the spine.
Oh.
And so that was enough for me. I took care of him there, you know, and worked on him a little bit. And next day, Mr. Crockett called me up and told me to come in the office. I thought, uh-oh, I was thinking, what about him or what, you know. And got in there, and Mr. Crockett says, Mr. Charles, tell me what happened. And I told him, and he stood up, shook my hand, and he said, you done exactly what you're supposed to do. And he says, I didn't expect no different out of you. And that's just the kind of man he was. Just a good man all the way around.
What was your guys' favorite town to work in that territory while you were there?
I'm not sure we had a favorite. What do you think, Bill?
I like going to Norfolk and Richmond and Roanoke up there a lot. We enjoyed staying at that motel there in Norfolk.
Yeah.
We have to laugh because it belonged to the mafia, the motel, and it's where the baseball team stays.
That was Norfolk.
The other team. I said Norfolk, yes.
Yeah.
And we enjoyed it a lot staying there. And
the folks were
really
good people, though, too. They were real nice to us.
They sure were. They treated Joe real nice and myself. We respected them, and they respected us, and you knew who the hell they were, and it was interesting. But they always kidded us. They said, y'all got girlfriends? I bet you got girlfriends. And
they'd tell me all the time, the girl be checking me out, and he'd say, he'd walk by and he'd turn her. When you start paying for all them broads you're taking me? I said, I ain't taking now. I can't get no girls. He said, one of these days you're going to be honest with me, buddy. So, but they're real nice. Treat us real well.
We like going to Richmond also. We like staying in the old hotel that they made movies out of. And it was
Gone with the Wind.
Yeah. And it
Stairway.
Was, yeah.
Not Stairway.
It was
Gone with the Wind.
Yeah. And it was a nice.
Go ahead, Ben.
Go ahead, Jeff. Go ahead.
It was so old. The halls, you could drive a truck down. It's so wide. But the lobby was absolutely beautiful. Marble, had a mezzanine up there, and all. We eat breakfast and all.
But you can get in that room, and you're liable, the door might jam shut on you. You can't get it open. They had to call him to come get you out of your room. I don't know.
It was fun seeing Joe come up the stairs when he's drunk. It was fun.
I took the elevator. I got off on the wrong floor sometimes, but I took the elevator. And like we seen one hotel I did up there one time, old Sweet Hansen. You know how big he was.
Yeah.
Anyway, we couldn't find him anywhere. Nobody could. And we didn't know if he got in trouble because we knew he was getting drunk. So we looked for him. So finally, we were on another floor, and we pushed the button to get on the elevator, go to another floor, and the door opened up. And Swede was standing there with his nose against the door, leaning on it. When it opened up, he fell like a big oak tree right out of the door. He was a character, but he was fun to be around. Lots of fun.
He was a big guy. He was totally different than Rip Hulk. Rip, you know, was his partner. And
right.
Rip was an A, started with an A, and I think everybody knows what I mean by that. But
yeah.
Sweet was one fine guy to be around.
Yep.
But terrific worker for a real big man, too.
He was. Boy, he could hit you hard, too.
Ooh.
Yeah, I can imagine. So, now, he owned a bar, too. Where was his bar? In Charlotte?
Yeah, it was in Charlotte. He was in with another guy named Sammy. Sammy's Club.
Mm-hmm.
And then he's broke off from that and bought a club right next door to it. And then his wife run it most of the time, when, you know, because he's out of town a lot. But it had a lot of pool tables in it, and it had a few strippers in there. And the boys go by there. One time I tell this one, Gene, you know what I'm talking about, up there, holding Gene.
Yeah.
But anyway, Gene's real shy. So he decided to stop by and have a beer with us. I walked over and told one of the trippers, I said, walk up there because she didn't have any top on. I walked over and I said, do me a favor. I said, that guy sitting over there, lean over and rub your boob on his ear. And he must have seen me talking to her because when she did that, he reached over and grabbed me under my armpit, my arm. He squeezed that thing so big, I had a bruise as big as a coffee cup.
He had the strongest fingers, little short nubby fingers, and they were as strong as anybody I've ever come across.
There's a guy, you know, I don't know if you know about Rib, I used to pull in the ring, the guys, I would, when they'd give me a forearm, I'd just grab my hair and roll them over the ropes, and give them one bang, and I said, now, if that's all hard you can get, you'll get a lot of trouble.
And here we go.
I'd date her, you know, and then they'd get me over there and lay it in, boy, and I'd just tighten up, and I wouldn't flinch or anything. I don't care how I felt. I wasn't going to let them know it bothered me. I said, you got to do better than that.
Joe would tag me, and I'd come in, and then knock the shit out of me real quick.
Yeah.
Gene, I'm going to say, Joe, who was that rib on? You or them?
I don't know, but anyway, Gene Anderson, whenever I done that to him, he'd back me over in that rope one time, and he'd come down, and my eyeball was turning around like a slot machine. One of my boobs was about tore off my chest. And I thought, what in the hell is that? I caught my breath, and when we got up into the dressing room there, they had a different dressing room, and it was upstairs. But anyway, I went to his dressing room. I said, tell me what you did to me. He said, man, you better go back to your dressing room before we get in trouble. I said, I ain't moving an inch until you tell me what you did. And I wouldn't leave the dressing room. And he told me finally. And it was so simple, but boy, it hurts. You know, he's a pretty tough guy.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was.
You're talking about tagging in Bill. Rocket to, or Sputnik told the story one in Mobile about in Atlanta one night. Rocket and Dromo was in the ring and they was throwing them haymakers at each other, laying them in.
Uh-huh.
And said Rocket reached over and tagged Sputnik. Sputnik said before he got in the ring, he said he hollered in the ring, said, "All right now, this ain't the stupid kid. This is Sputnik coming in here."
Over in Asheville one time, me and Bill started doing that clothesline thing. You know, there wasn't nobody doing it, so we decided we'd do it.
One second,
it worked
Joe.
Out pretty good, but we come out with another deal, too. And the clothesline worked great for us. And in fact, some of the guys in the territory said they're going to take it with them and use it when they go to another territory. And I don't know if it grew from that or what, but it grew, you know, a big thing, that clothesline. But anyways, we come up with another deal on the way to Greenville and Asheville, and another one was where Bill has their arm stretched out, and he reached over and tagged Bill Legal, and he tagged me. And you know how somebody bow and arrow you over the rope, jerk the ropes, and you flip over it?
Yeah.
I done that, and I would come across their arm, both my legs. And so we was doing that for a while there. And anyway, the guy that Bill had jerked Bill over there. And I kicked him with the butt of them, heel of them shoes right in the head. Black killed him. So we didn't get to do that no more. Bill refused to.
But we used the clothesline a little bit different. One of us would be on the outside, and one on the inside would, you know, have it, and you'd grab hold and come down, run down the ropes, and you would clothesline the guy. And so that was illegal as the devil, where now it's just a clothesline for in the ring over and over again. But this, yeah, we used it that way for a finish, and it got over real well, especially with Nelson Royal and Jones, because we worked with them a lot, and they put it over big time. But
We mentioned George Becker a little time back. Did you guys, was he still working when you guys were there?
Oh yes. He's pretty old guy, too.
Ta-ta.
Yeah, he used to give you a punch, a little side punch-like thing. He'd go, ta-ta-ta. And we always laughed about it and cut up about it and made jokes about it. But I was in the ring with him one night, and I wasn't thinking that I threw a punch to him, too, and I went, ta-ta-ta. So, I'm sure he didn't like it too much.
But we was at,
he came with Weaver all the time, most of the time, didn't he?
Yes.
Yes.
He was booking for a while there, too.
But we never... Go ahead.
No, I was going to say, how were they to work with Weaver and Becker? Did you guys work with them any?
Becker's a lot easier. Yeah, Becker was a lot easier.
But we would, we've been working with Sandy Scott and Briscoe, Young Briscoe,
over and over.
Yes.
Yeah, we were married
and
to
we
him.
Got, we were married to him and got would get over in a certain city. And here comes Becker and Weaver in the next match, next week, and they would kill us off right then, bang bang. But you had to do it, so that was business.
Yeah.
And you had to do what, you know, what was the deal.
If you had to pick somebody that you enjoyed working with the most, who would you guys pick that you enjoyed in that territory?
That territory.
two different groups, Sandy Scott and Briscoe.
That's probably my favorite.
And then Nelson Royal and Paul Jones. And we wrestled many a time, and they were a pleasure. They made it lifelike, and we added to it. We didn't cut up, but we laughed at each other. But it was enjoyable to work with them.
That territory there, one thing they didn't want, if you was not the main event, they didn't want you to outshine the main event. And what I mean by that is doing in cheap heat and all that stuff, just to build heat, putting heat on the referee too and all that.
Right.
They didn't care for all that in that territory. But you could do heat. You could get heat there with the crowd and do everything pretty much like you're supposed to, you know, in that territory. And just like they put us one night in what was that, Florence, South Carolina?
Yeah.
And they put us with York and his partner. And then we had both teams of heels. And they said, y'all don't work baby face or what? And so we said, we don't care. We go either way. And so they said, I told them, me and Bill told them, if y'all want to be the heels, it's fine with us. And they said, well, let us be the heels. So we got out there and just worked the match. You know, they put us over. We were doing good holds and making some moves there. And then they started a little bit of healing, you know. And next thing you know, we were milking for a tag. And that's all it took. We made that first comeback. That match, nobody could top it that night. And it made some of them mad that was on main event. But we milked for that tag. When it hit that whole crowd, every time you throw a punch, you go, woo! Get going with you. And I always did like that when you get them going good.
But see, they didn't realize that's all we did in Tennessee for five or six years is babyface. So
yeah.
We knew what the hell to do. And so and that's where it worked for us. But we made the biggest mistake. Ole told us one time, said, come in, go into the office there and give them a couple things, you know, that you want to do and blah, blah, blah. And we didn't. We just rode along with the ride because Joe was happy where he lived out there. I was happy. We were making good money. And so we didn't want to get into a big contest with the Andersons and whoever else was heels.
But, well, one thing, too, if you're the main event in Carolinas, that's a tough job. If you work main event all the time, main at night, every night, then you got to make a lot of interviews. You got to go to the TV and do this. You got to go there and make interviews there. You got to make some in the office. And just all the stuff, sometimes they can't even leave the town until they get there after the matches have started because they have so many things to do. And, you know, and if you went and worked out, it just ate up all your time.
Where'd y'all work out up there? At the Y?
Yeah.
Why?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, did you ever hear the stories about Ole at the Y working out?
No, tell me.
Ole, they had this karate guy that come in there, and they had the mats, and anyway, the karate guy couldn't, he had classes, so he never could get the mats if any of the wrestlers had them first. And so he's always in there griping and fussing and telling Ole and all that, and of all people he had to tell, is that all that crap y'all doing, man, so y'all need to just quit coming in here and all kind of stuff. And so Ole started telling me, and I said, he said, that old wrestling ain't nothing, you know. He said, we in here trying to learn some stuff that really works good. And Ole said, yeah. He said, that karate stuff works great, don't it? And he said, and he kept on building it for a few weeks. So he told one day, and he says, does that punch really hurt that y'all shoot into the stomach? And all? He says, yeah. And he says, I'd like for you just hit me in the stomach one time with that. I just like to see how bad it hurts. And the guy said, he said, no, what's the matter? You talking about what you can do? Do it. And he, you know how old he could egg you on. And he egged him on. And the guy said, okay, I'll do it. And what the guy didn't know is Ovi put one of them big old weights down his trunks. I think he broke his hand. Just that's some crazy stuff went over there. But it just, I don't know. It's just a good territory, though. It was.
So did you guys get to do much interview time and all this stuff, or did they mainly keep you just in the towns?
No, different
times.
We've done
stuff in some towns, you know, just like we had a deal at High Point TV where we was going into, say, Danville, Virginia there, and that town never drew big houses. You know, it drew some pretty good houses, but never real big houses. And so they're going to put a battle royal in there, and they put us out there and told us we was going to do some of that stuff like you do in Tennessee or something. We got out there and started talking about how we're going to throw this one up over in the balcony and this one out of the rope and this in there, and we're going to hang him up on the corner post and all this. And we got the Klondike Bill and somebody else, I can't remember who it was now. While we're doing all that, he'd come out and Klondike Bill belly butts us, and we take off. Had the biggest house I ever had in Danville on account of that little bit. Just, you know, a lot of things in Carolina territory, when you done something, it meant something.
Yeah.
And, you know, Jerry, you worked a lot, didn't you?
Yes.
Yeah, you know what I'm talking about. You get stuff there and you do some stuff, it's business there.
Yeah, they drew tons of money up there. Unbelievable.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
Yeah.
The least little thing would draw money. When Paint Your Pick, what was his name?
What?
The guy that painted the picture.
You talking about Argentina?
Apollo.
Apollo. When he was up there, and he did with the famous with his pictures there, and the Mahler destroyed one of his pictures. Well, they drew money all over the whole territory because of the darn pictures. And he was always paint your pick. But that's one of the small things that we draw.
Did y'all work up there when George was doing the booking?
George Becker? Yeah.
George Scott?
Yeah, George Scott was doing the booking, yeah. Sure did. Yeah. At Apollo, only problem with him was all he needed to fly around. He didn't have much knowledge on you know, working a match and laying down a good story. Well, he had to do his on the interviews and different, you know, things like that.
Yeah.
But I mean, he was he'd get to going out there and flying. I can't remember the guy's name in Charlotte. Remember the guy, Bill, that used to, he's a real old-timer. I think he went as Big Bulldog or something. But he's a real old-timer, and he played golf all the time. And he was real top-notch at it. But anyway, Apollo was telling him in the dressing room, Jooch, we do this, do that. He went on, and what match was going to last about 10 minutes, and he told him about 20 minutes worth of stuff. And so the guy was tying his shoes. And then when Apollo got through telling him, he just looked at me and he said, and just who in the hell you think you could do all that with? So he kept blowing his mind.
What was the heat between the Scott brothers?
I don't know.
That goes back
before
20 years before everything. That happened down in Florida when they broke up. But they just couldn't work with each other, you know, and that's what was the problem there.
And Sandy Scott was such a nice man.
Oh,
yes, he was. Yes, he was.
Sandy was a sweetheart of a guy.
Yeah, he was.
But I never found out what they didn't even speak to one another up there.
Yep.
Yes. Well, Sandy was a lot more fun to be around too.
Oh, absolutely.
He was relaxed himself.
And he helped teach the Briscoe boy. What was his name? Jerry? Not Jerry, but
Jerry.
Yes, Jerry.
Yeah, it was Jerry. And he, you know, helped teach him. And he taught us things also, because we had so many matches together. Because we'd worked semi all over the place. And it was, but he was a ring general, and he knew how to handle it. And that's why he was successful all his life.
Well, that territory was primarily, it's like Tennessee was primarily a tag team territory until George Scott got the book, and then he kind of, he brought in Johnny Valentine and started Flair as a solo, because Flair, when he first started, was dealing with, he kind of replaced Sweet Hansen as Rip Hawk's partner.
Yeah.
And, but then they started shifting more towards the, singles competition, putting that towards the top of the card, and then they nearly lost all that when they had that plane crash in 75. Were you there in 75 when that happened? You still?
No,
up there?
I was there whenever he come back. When he come back to Carolinas?
Yeah.
He broke his back, you know. And I met him at Swede's Bar, and then Angelo Mosca was in there, and we were shooting pool. And then when he come in, we stopped and sitting there talking to him, and Mosca was sitting on the edge of the pool table. And here comes a Mark in there, and all of a sudden he could tell us all about wrestling. You know what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
And he told Moscow, he says, in punches, y'all throw can't hurt a thing, you know. So Moscow says, really? He shot one in him in the belly so hard the boy started throwing up. That boy couldn't even breathe, he was throwing up so bad. And Moscow just sat there and started talking to us. He didn't care. And he was a character.
Is still is. Life?
Is he? Did he
die? You know, no. He's still alive. You know, last year he got into it with Joe Capp, some sort of ceremony they were doing at the Football Hall
Capp,
of Fame thing in Canada.
Capp worked him over.
I heard it the other way around. That Mosca didn't even get up out of his wheelchair. He was in a wheelchair and whacked him in the head with a cane.
Yeah, I saw that on YouTube.
Mosca and I used to go to some of them clubs around the Carolinas. See, most of them clubs close up early. And you go over the South Carolina side, and we went to one. It's in a shopping center, and it's listed as a Domino's club. They even had roulette wheels and everything, and it was illegal. Everything they were doing there, even the bar was. And you had to go through two doors to get in there, and they'd check you out through a glass. And when they left there, before daylight, they had a compactor that would take all the cans and squeeze them out, and they'd put them in bags and take them out of there. And that was a real dangerous place to be, though. Me and Mosca went there one night, and he told me, he said, Joe, whatever you do in here, we can get killed. So do not say anything to anybody. If they get smart, just let them go. And I said, whatever. So anyway, we stayed in there, and I got along with everybody good. We left, got out on the sidewalk. Here comes some guy with a woman. I don't know if it was his wife or what. But when I started walking, we were meeting him, and I'm walking by him, and she smiled, so I just smiled back. And that guy went off. I'll kick your you-know-what and everything else. And I said, you think you will? I said, Turner. Let's go. And I said, no, man. I said, this guy wants to jump on me. And he says, I know it. Let's go. And we left, but we went to a few shady places, him and I did. But, you know, Moscow was nobody to mess with.
No, he'd fight in a minute.
Oh, yeah. Shoot, yeah.
You know, one thing that we had the privilege of by working in Carolina, you work with some of the top talent in the world that come in and out of there and got to know them and all. That's why we're almighty lucky to know them. And it just, you know, learned everything. It was really interesting.
You talking about Moscow and that football, you know, Moscow had to go play in Canada.
Yeah.
He got in so much trouble in the United States, they didn't want him. He said, everywhere I went, I got in trouble. I was getting in fights and everything else. He said, fighting the football players. And he said, hey, let me have him go to Canada and play. But he didn't care.
Were the Hines brothers still up there when you guys were up there?
First time I went up there, I went with Billy Hines. The first time I went up there.
Was he by himself, or was Jimmy up there with him?
No, Jimmy wasn't going no more. Jimmy was, but he told me everything about Billy Hines that I needed to know before I went up there with him. He told me all kind of little tricks he pulled. And he says, if it's his time to drive, said, get on the interstate. And he said, he'll close that one eye that you can see, and he'll run off the road. And, anyway, and he says, and then he'll do it again. He'll do it two or three times. And he'll say, hey, if I just can't keep my eyes open, man, you may have to drive. So anyway, he pulled that on me. So when he said, you're going to have to drive, I said, Billy, I said, you know, you're not asleep until you close both eyes. You got to keep both of them shut to go to sleep. And I said, Jimmy done told me about this crap. He said, that damn Jimmy Hines. But, you know, Billy's pretty good at pulling stuff.
Yeah, I've heard some stories about Billy Hines.
Yeah, I got some myself.
he was a big friend of Mr. Crockett.
He was. Mr. Crockett.
Yeah.
When he got, that's where he basically started that. He was going around them old timers where they hung out at and restaurants and stuff. And he'd get around them, and he'd tell them, I'm a wrestler. He wasn't a wrestler. He wrestled on a carnival. And he said, I'm a wrestler. And so he kept telling them, can we make any money around here? And they kept pumping him up, telling him all kinds of stories about how much money they make, up in the thousands and all that. You know, a week, and that's back way back then. And they told him, he said, why don't you go talk to Mr. Crockett? He said, I will. And he had one of them carnival papers in his back pocket. I forgot what they call it. But you know what I'm talking about? That paper that tells where the carnival's at and all that stuff going on.
Yeah, like a playbill.
Yeah, sort of like that. It used to be called something else back then. But anyway, he had one in his back pocket, and he walked in Mr. Crockett's office, and all he had on was a pair of jeans and a white T-shirt. And so he went in, and he said, Mr. Crockett, I'm a wrestler. I'm going to wrestle for you. Mr. Crockett said, you are? He said, yeah, I'm going to wrestle for you. He said, I know these guys are making $1,500 a week, but I'll work for you for $600. Mr. Crockett said, you will. He said, yeah. And Mr. Crockett said, he's so funny, and he had that carnival paper in his back pocket. And that got over with him, too. And so he told him, he said, I tell you what, boy, I'm going to book you. And Mr. Crockett owned some one or two stores in the National Shirt Companies, them old stores they used to have. And he said, look, I tell you what I'm going to do. He said, I'm going to send you over there. You're going to have to dress up if you go wrestle for me. I'm going to send you over there, and they're going to give you some clothes. And he sent him over there, and he gave him $250 bills, and he says, "This for you to get by until you get a check." And they said, "Yes, sir." And he tried to be all business. They said when he walked out of Mr. Crockett's office, some of the boys saw him. Said he jumped up there and kicked his heels together. He said, "Whoopee!"
Where was he from originally? I know he's always built from Houston because Jimmy was, but
yeah, Perry
from Arkansas,
really? Perry Gould, yeah. Arkansas. Now he could pull some ribs. He pulled one on Speedy Hetfield. When he got out of business for a while there, he went up there and Jody Hamilton come to see him. Not Jody, but Larry Hamilton come up there to see him soon and all, and said he's working everybody around there. He said, little old place, and he had to plant some stuff. He's sitting on the porch drinking, and the guy's out there planting stuff for him, his neighbors. And anyway, Speedy called him up and told him he was coming through there and wanted to look him up. But Billy got a job as a policeman in that little town. He had to pass no test to be a policeman there then, you know. And so he had a policeman as a partner. He said he liked Gomer Pyle. And he said, he pumped him up and told him, he said, "I got a man coming through, he's an older man, he's going to even have his wife with him. He said, he's carrying drugs. He said, me and you go get him." He said, "We are." He said Speedy was, he knew about what time he was coming, so they parked out there on the side of town. And here comes Speedy along, so they turned the siren on and pulled him over, and he said, "Now look, I'm going to back you up. I'm going to stay back here so I can keep eye on you. Then you go up there and tell that SOB to get out of that car." So that old guy done it all. He put the gun in his face and everything. Yeah, he's
lucky nobody got cut that day.
Ooh. I know. He's good at that. Yeah. He was good at that. But he wasn't able to work.
Oh yeah, he was a great worker. Both, yeah. Actually, both of them were. And I was doing some researching last night, just going through an old a newspaper archive site, and I came across the newspaper clipping from Columbus when he and Mario pulled that deal where Mario hit him on TV with the pennies and then got arrested for doing that because the chief of police saw it on TV and went down there and arrested him. But I had no clue that Jimmy worked as long as he did, because I came across results for Jimmy in Eugene, Oregon in 1954, and I had no clue he had been around that long.
Yeah. Good little Hans' real name is Owen Yeah.
Owen Yeah, yeah, I knew that.
Yeah. But Billy, he drank a lot. Everybody knew that.
Yeah.
And anyway, sometimes he wouldn't remember he went to a town. He couldn't wait to get his paycheck to see if he showed up. But one time in Carolinas there, he come home drunk and went to bed, and they had a station wagon. Billy always got up the next morning and go to the liquor store because they open and get him a bottle. So he goes out there and gets in his car and goes to the liquor store. And he looks down at the car and the seat, and he sees a hairbrush and a head scarf. He said, "Oh, my God, I left that in the car." And he didn't even remember how I got there, you know. So he took it and threw it out the window. And he come back home with his bottle sitting there drinking and everything, and Peg was acting real normal and everything. She said, "Look, I'm going to run up to the corner and get something." She went out in the car and she come back and said, "Billy, have you seen my hairbrush and my scarf?" He done threw it away.
Didn't you say he used to hide stuff in his front yard? Hide bottles in his bushes and
one
stuff
time,
like that.
She was always trying to get him to quit drinking. And he'd hide it behind the toilet and under flower beds, in flower beds and everything else. And so in Panama City, when he lived there,
she done told him. She said, "Ben, I'm not gonna put up that drink anymore. If you do, we're through." And so anyway, he come home, and the next morning when he got up, he got a blanket and told her, he says, "I'm going out there and lay in the sun. I need a little tan." She said, "All right, Billy." And she washed him out the window, in the kitchen window. And he laid out there getting the sun. But when he come in the house, he's drunk as a skunk. And she says, "Billy, now, I told you I was going to leave you, but this is one time you got me snowed, man." And said, "If you just tell me how you're doing this," I said, I won't say nothing. I'll let you slide this time. "I just got to know how in the hell you done this." And what he done when he came in the night before, he buried a bottle of whiskey down in, I think it's vodka, down in the sand. Then he went, got that blanket and cut a little hole in it and took a straw out there and laid down on the bottle. Every time he go face down, he was sucking.
While you guys were talking, I got a call from Mr. and Ms. Smith. Charlene came through her surgery fine. She's back in her room.
Yeah.
And the doctor will be in the morning, and they'll get some more results and figure out what all's going on. But she did fine tonight.
Goodness.
You was talking about Gene Anderson a few minutes ago, about him being kind of shy.
Yeah.
I'm not going to call no names to protect the innocent. But we had worked a show in Columbus, Ohio, and me and Gene and Ole had went and ate. We ate in a hotel. And Ole, I forget where Ole went. He went somewhere to get a paper or do something. Anyway, me and Gene was going to get on the elevator and go upstairs to our rooms. And the elevator opens up, and there's a guy on the elevator that we all know and love. And he's got this girl standing there, and she's wearing a fur coat and a pair of high heels. And this guy looks at you. When the door opens, me and Gene standing there, and neither one of us get on the elevator. We're just looking. And this guy looks at us and goes, "Show Bobby Gene what you got on under the coat." Gene never raised his voice. He says, "If she opens that coat, I'll kill you."
You don't have to cave and say, "Well, I won't say his name, but his initials are Ron West." He tells that story on himself more than we do. So.
God, that thing was so funny. He didn't want to pop for no room. He rode up and down the elevator. Oh, my God. God, it was funny.
Yeah. You ever seen them boys in Raleigh, North Carolina? They had Blackjack Mulligan and Ric Flair and all them staying at this certain hotel there. Well, from the parking lot, you walk right past the swimming pool. And on Tuesday night, they would, I think it's Tuesday night, anyway, they would open the bar, which is normally closed when all the boys are staying there. They go in there and they get pitchers of beer. And it was summertime. And them jokers, just like Ric Flair, one of them took a pitcher of beer and just pulled his belt pants out and poured beer down him. "I'll cool you off." And they started pouring beer on each other and everything else. And anyway, there's a man and woman that come in there and sit there. And they recognized some of them, but then they started talking about y'all act like animals, you know, and all that. And it says, y'all don't have no decency at all. Well, they poured beer on them, too. And then they went out to the swimming pool, and I'm talking about the people nobody knew, the people that's just staying there. They're throwing them in the pool when they come by.
Got to entertain yourself.
Ooh.
Well, I won't call any names, but this one guy that's up there, he's kind of, he's real chubby. Real chubby. I mean, a little bit flabby, like, you know. And anyway, we met some girls, and me and him were sharing a room. And we went up to the room, and anyway, he had this old girl is bigger than him. And only saw her going in the room with, sitting in Norfolk, Virginia.
Ole started picking it. Man, what are you doing at that sweat hole? Okay, you know how old he is. And all that. And that guy told Ole, he said, well, you know, if I could get the women to chase me to chase you, man, he says, I wouldn't have to fool them kind of women. And I spoke up because I thought it was kind of rude the way he was talking to him about some favor. And I said, Ole, I was in the room with him. Don't worry about him. He said, they just both laid in the same bed and chewed the fat all night. Some of the stories, huh?
Did you guys ever come across or work with, what was his name, George Strickland and Sam Shepard when they were together?
No. You, George Strickland? Sam Shepard was Dr. Sam Shepard, Bill.
Yeah.
Yeah, Dr. Yeah, we wrestled them. We wrestled in Kentucky.
Oh, okay.
That was, but we sure did. I've got a clipping somewhere, Mike, of that.
That was an odd thing. George couldn't stand him, from what I understand. The only reason he even helped him because he snuck off and married Strickland's daughter, and she was barely legal at the time Shepard married her, and he was in his late 30s or early 40s when that happened.
Yeah. Yeah, well, I remember Strickland telling that how much he denies that he ever done that. I remember that now, Bill, a little bit.
Yep.
And Strickland was telling about it. He said he didn't do it.
Yeah, they proved he didn't do it.
Yeah. But he was an odd character from the things I've seen about him. I mean, he's just... Even if he didn't do it, he was still an oddball. But
well, he turned out to be an alcoholic too.
Yeah, I knew that. That's the reason he lost his license to practice, because of that.
Yeah, I was actually going to do Cleveland whenever it was on the news that morning, happened the day before. And that's all they were talking about, Dr. Sam Shepard. And they just, and that was way back then. I can't remember what year it was. It's probably about in the late 50s. I don't remember.
Yeah, that's about right, because he was in and out of jail a couple of times between trials before he hooked up with Strickland. I think it was Jody Hamilton that told the story that he and Tom were working with the two of them, and Shepard's finishing hold was he'd stick his two fingers in your mouth and press that on your tongue and like use it as a submission hold. And he was telling Jody, I guess they were working a 2 out of 3 or whatever, and he was telling Jody that's how they were going to win their fall. And Jody said, you stick those dirty fingers in my mouth and I'll bite them off.
I just got a text from Bo James. He says he has a Dr. Sam Shepard prescription pad.
He ought to try to sell that.
sell
part of it.
They ain't no telling what that boy's got in his possession up there. and he ain't no sell none of it. It's like he says, he just sits and looks at it, you know.
It's a prescription pad. He ought to be able to pull that in half and sell part of it and keep part of it. Make
I heard that. He can sell part of it in the dressing room. Some of these shows he goes to.
Those people in the dressing room won't know who Sam Shepard is.
It don't matter as long as it says doctor and prescription pad on it.
That's
you
true.
Joe and Bill, were y'all listening to the show last week when we got to talking about some of the stuff that he comes across on these shows?
No, I just heard about 10 or 15 minutes of it.
Did y'all hear him talking about the Weed Eater matches?
I think I did hear something about that.
He sent me and Jerry a clip off YouTube. That is absolute, I mean, I'm still, that's the craziest thing I have ever seen.
Yeah, a lot of y'all seen these guys that was down here years ago. They used to break glass and throw thumbtacks down and body slam each other on them.
Kyle Matthews.
Talking about that too.
Kyle Matthews sent me a YouTube thing the other day, and he said, Bobby, he said, run it up to about the one minute 23 second mark. He said, you ain't gonna believe this. And he sent me one, and I watched it, and there was a guy stabbed a guy in the arm with a box cutter. These guys, I mean, this is insane.
Yeah. Yep, they don't know what it's like when you cut an artery. That stuff shoots way out there.
I heard that.
And yeah. I didn't even want to take a backdrop when I was in the business, much less do crazy stuff like that. You know what I? You know the whole I hate worse than anything is because I can't stand heights and I can't ride fair, ride to the fair some of them. And it was that airplane spin.
Yeah.
They make one spin and I'm already dizzy as everything. And some of them, man, seem like they spin me for 10 minutes. Throw me down and holler, get up. Yeah, which way I go? Well, your partner there, Mr. Bowman, was probably slipping that information and giving him $5 to spend you an extra 2 or 3 times before you go.
Really?
Yeah, he might wouldn't do that now, would you, Bill?
No, that's not me.
Yeah. Well, guys, we got a caller on the line. I want to get on the line with us. This is somebody from, I guess, 334. That's either Montgomery or Birmingham. I can't remember which is which. Let me get him on the line with us. Caller from Alabama, you're on the line with us. Go ahead. Who have we got?
Hey, how y'all doing tonight?
All right. Who are we talking to?
Hey, this is Dennis Mitchell from Montgomery, Alabama. Michael, it's great to have you.
Hey, Dennis, what's up, man? Good to hear from you.
Yeah, I appreciate it, sir. Well, guys, I want to ask you something. You know what? I'm real frustrated with how our wrestling's going these days. It's not the good old days when y'all used to wrestle, you know? It's frustrating that you have some punk wrestlers like CM Punk, you know? They could not measure it up to y'all, in my personal opinion. And he thinks he's a punk, but if he got in the ring with Jerry or you, Mike, or anyone else, you wouldn't last 5 minutes in the ring, in my opinion. It's real frustrating to see some jerk like that on TV.
Yeah, it's a total different ball game now.
Yeah,
I didn't realize you were from Montgomery. I bet you used to watch Burrhead Jones when you were a little kid. Probably Joe Turner, too.
I did watch Burrhead. You know, I call Burrhead every now and then. He's a good friend of mine. I'm friends with Mike Mooneyham. Text him or call him sometimes to myself, you know, and all that stuff. Well, Michael, I want to ask you something. Did you ever get to wrestle Johnny Eagles?
Did I ever do what?
Did you ever get to wrestle Johnny Eagles?
No, I never did get to wrestle Johnny. I watched him a lot of times and got to know him a little bit. Never got to get in the ring with him. Would have loved to because he was so smooth and he threw the best left-hand uppercut of anybody I ever saw, and he could slap. He did it so quick, and he'd slap his left shoulder with his right hand, and it was sound. You could hear it all over the arena. It was so good. Jerry's the one to talk about Johnny Eagles. Jerry was good friends with Johnny. Worked with him quite a bit.
Yeah, no doubt about it. I remember Johnny Eagles used to wrestle in Alabama. He wrestled for Tri-States. I was just a kid. That's when the promotion at Philly Golden Dome, you know.
And
when Jimmy Golden wrestled there and Jerry Lawler wrestled there briefly in Montgomery.
Yeah.
And Bill Dundee.
Jerry and Steve both worked there. Steve Lawler worked there as well. Steve Kyle.
So I think Bill Dundee worked in Tri-States too, I think. And all that. It's just frustrating, guys. I appreciate what y'all do. I give you a lot of free plug on Sports Radio 740 in Montgomery, Alabama. You know, every time I talk to John Longshore and Barry McKnight and Roger Schultz, who used to be a senator at Alabama, he was on the show Biggest Loser. I give y'all a lot of free plug on the radio, you know. I give y'all free publicity.
Well, thank you.
Well,
I appreciate that.
Free publicity don't hurt nobody and all that. So, guys, y'all have a good night. Y'all take care. Roll Tide. Thank you.
All right, Dennis. Appreciate you listening, man. Take care. I bet if you took Burrhead Jones through Montgomery right now, would your windows roll down, he'd still get stopped.
I don't know.
He was a legend. He was a legend in Montgomery.
If you ride through there with your window down, the police will stop you. I can guarantee that.
He'll be causing something.
We picked him up at the bus station in Montgomery on the way to the reunion about 4 years ago, and he's in the van with us. And he had a few cocktails on the bus down from New York, and we got caught. That was the year that the expressway, they had the fire, and they blocked the expressway, and we had to cut across through Atmore and go to Pensacola and then come into Mobile. And as we were in Atmore, the traffic was backed up. I mean, it was stopped bumper to bumper. And Debbie was in the front seat with me, and she goes, you know, she said, there's got to be another side street or something where we'll make a little time if you'll cut over. So we did, and we wound up in a not-so-savory part of town, and somebody in the back said, well, it's a good thing we got Burrhead with us in case any trouble breaks out. And I started laughing. I said, y'all don't understand. I said, if, in fact, trouble did break out, I said, Burrhead would jump out of the van and go, thank you, brothers. They kidnapped me. I was hitchhiking, and I'm glad y'all have rescued me.
Really? Yeah, I told y'all, I think, about Burrhead and the time was going out through the country, and they had a Klan meeting going on, and they're burning a cross and everything, and he says, and it's dark. He said, what's going on up there? And I said, I think they're having a Klan rally. And he said, you sure? I said, yeah. I said, but I said, if you want me to, I'll pull up there and check it out. Oh, no, man, keep going. So I started slowing down. I was like, I was going to pull in there. He crawled over, laid down a back floorboard. The funniest thing I ever seen Burrhead, he done a commercial in Montgomery, and he was Santa Claus. Yeah. He was something else, man.
Oh.
I can tell you some stories about him, but it had to be in private. I can't.
I understand. I've heard some of them.
Yeah. He's something else. But.
He would be in the ring with you, and he was so funny. He'd be in the ring with you, and you'd lock up with him, or you'd be referee or whatever, and all of a sudden he'd step back and look at you, and he'd, I know he did it to you, Joe, I've heard you tell it. He'd step back and he'd go, don't you call me that. And he would use this racial slur, yes. And son, hey, it'd get real quiet.
Man, how would you like to be in a town where there's only white people or whatever, the police and the rosters? And he'd do that.
Oh, yeah.
I told him, I'd take my car and just leave. I wasn't even going to get my bag. Yeah. Yeah, he was a character.
First time I ever got color in a ring, it was compliments of Mr. Burrhead Jones. It wasn't even intended. We were working in Selma, and though I don't know where Fuller got this old ring that he had, but they didn't have turnbuckles. They just used duct tape in the corners, and duct tape, you know, the corners. You guys have all seen rings like that, and probably worked in rings like that. There was no padding on the turnbuckles. And Burrhead got carried away a little bit and kept ramming my head in there, and I caught one of the sharp corners where that tape had peeled up and cut my eyebrow. And I got mad at him, and I was going to throw him out of the ring. And he said, I'm supposed to go over. I said, yeah, you're going to go over this rope right here. What are you going to go over? That was the first time I ever got juiced, and it wasn't intended. But you couldn't do anything to Burrhead Jones in that part of the country that you wouldn't cause a riot. And,
yeah.
He was that popular. He's a character, I tell you.
Yeah, he was. Debbie, I mean, you know.
We were all sitting outside the hotel there, Michael, one year. It was one of those marches where it was pretty, and it was probably about 70 degrees. And we all took our chairs and just pulled them out on the sidewalk, and we was all just sitting out there talking. And we had the whole side of the hotel was ours, and he was in the last room, not on the side where me and Charlie normally stay, but on the other side. We were over there that year. And these two guys pulled up and got out, and they was trying to sell us some watches and necklaces and stuff, you know. And you know, no, we ain't interested. So they got back in their car, and they was probably, these guys were probably in their 20s. And they got in their car, and they started on down, and they went and turned the corner down at the end of the hotel, and, man, they locked that car down. Jumped out and screamed at the top of their lungs, Burrhead Jones. They recognized him. He was sitting down there, just sitting there by himself, and they knew who he was.
Well, we stopped in a little town. We went up to Gaston, Alabama, from Montgomery, I think it was. Or Tyler, one of them, something like that. And coming back, we come through this little town, and there's a little activity going on. You can see cars riding down the street, but not on the main highway so much. And he said, Joe, turn down the street here. And I says, what we can do down there? He said, man, they got some chicken wings down there, and it's fantastic. Well, you know, all his soul brothers all out on the street, get riding up and down the street. A lot of them are real young and all. And I said, Burrhead, it's almost 1 o'clock in the morning. I'm not going in there. And he said, man, you ain't got a word. They ain't going to bother you. And I said, all right. I'm going to pull around the side. And we went in there. And when we come out, his car squealing brakes and everything else. And I was the biggest honky you ever seen, boy. I think all of them cussing me. And I said, Joe, I'm going to buy them. He said, well, you know, I don't know. Maybe they just cut up. I said, yeah, right. So you have to watch them. We'll take you some places you don't want to go.
We got another caller. I'm going to get on the line. This one's from East Tennessee, so let me get him on the line. Hey, code 423, you're on the line. Who have I got?
You got Bo James. What's happening, guys?
That's who I thought it was. You got a Burrhead Jones story?
No, no. Here's a Charlotte story. I got a name for Joe and Bill. But Peter Postelou. Any memories of working for him in Roanoke?
Roanoke with me, yeah.
You sure have.
Yeah, a lot of times. One time they pissed him in a bathroom there. The boys did. He went in there. You know how they pencil a door in? Where you can't open it?
Yeah.
They push it in that wedge part of a lead pencil. Then they jam it in there, drive it in there, and it makes that thing where it won't open. And some of them boys penciled him in that bathroom, and he had to stay in there about 45 minutes before he got out. But he's a pretty nice guy.
Oh, yeah. We liked staying in Roanoke because we would stay at the hotel next to the... What was the name of that hotel, Joe?
I can't remember the name of it.
We liked staying there. And it was good. But it was a nice city, really. But we all... That was on Saturday night. We'd always end up there. And then you had the 200-mile trip back to Charlotte. That was the only bad thing.
See, that's where Tony Amos come out of, too.
Yep.
Yeah.
From Roanoke.
Well, yeah. Was the only building he was running when you were there at the Starlight Arena?
You went
I don't know what the name of it was.
It was the Starlight Arena where he had, until they built the new building in Roanoke, but I think that was in the early 70s.
Yeah.
Well,
you go down to that hotel where we stayed, and all the way down the basement, and that hotel was built over a river. And they had a hole cut out in the floor down the basement, and you could watch the fish go by. Down there, that's something else. That's where you're talking about Billy Hams a while ago. Luther Lindsay, Billy Hams always ribbing him. So anyway, he kept telling Luther, he says, because Luther had a daughter that was interested in sports. She did a lot of swimming, though, what she liked the best. And he lived up close to Greensboro there, out of town a little ways. And so he kept telling Luther, said, you need to get her a horse. You know, she likes all that stuff. Luther kept telling him, she don't need no darn horse, Billy. And he kept on, and he went for weeks with it. And so one night he went down there, and we was all staying at the hotel there. But Billy went out there and found somebody that had a mule for sale. And he bought that mule. And so he went and rented a U-Haul trailer, an open U-Haul trailer.
And he thought he could tie that mule in there where he couldn't duck. He tied that mule like you tie down cargo in there. And he got back by the hotel and come down and pulled up there, and the old mule kicked around there and got out that rope and run the whole town. So but Billy tried the old mule and got him back as far as Luther's house about 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning. And he tied him up there and just left him. The next day, Luther calls him up. Billy, we put that moving mule in my yard for him. He said, I don't know what you're talking about. But he had a mule
left. How many TVs were they doing when you first went into Crockett's?
Oh, man. We're doing, I have to stop and think about it. Riley was a big one. And,
Riley and me. High Point. And then Charlotte TV.
In Charlotte.
Yep.
And that's pretty much it. They bicycle that stuff around a lot.
I knew they had one in Roanoke. They did. They only did it for a couple of years out of the studio there in Roanoke.
Yeah. That's just a heck of a territory. I mean, everybody goes there. Jerry tell you, that's a heck of a territory.
When did they first start going into West Virginia?
He didn't go to a lot of places in West Virginia.
Oh, we made that ride up there a couple times.
Yeah. Up in beautiful fight. We went to Charlottesville. Charlottesville where we went up there, Bill?
And what was the name of that town where we were in the ring, and I looked down at the people, and I said, Joe, it's snowing outside. Some of those people don't have any shoes. And I said, they all look alike.
And West Virginia's still like that now. Everything changed a bit.
They all look like Bill.
Thank you very much.
When did you go into Charlotte, Jerry? 78, you said?
78, yeah.
You and Ted went in together, or did you go ahead of him, or he go
no,
ahead
he's
of you?
No, he's already there.
Okay.
I came in from Portland.
Who did you guys work with the most there? I'm sorry, Bob. Go ahead.
I just wanted, no, it's Joe. I was wondering if Oates and him were there any time during the same time we were.
No. Ted was there, maybe.
I think he was. In fact, I think he's the one that told me he was coming in.
Yeah. We were leaving, Joe, when Ted came in for one or two matches around. We saw him.
Yeah.
But then we were leaving.
Yeah, and we asked about Jerry, and he told us he was coming in.
Yeah.
That's about all I can remember of it.
We knew that y'all would tear that territory up.
We put in a lot of time there.
Yeah.
Nobody wanted to leave there.
Yeah. We would have loved to have worked with y'all.
That would have been fun.
Yeah. Who did you guys work with the most up there, Jerry? You and Ted.
Gene and Rene Goulet.
Oh, really?
Then like Brute Bernard and Gene and Swede and Renee, and then Swede and Gene.
How was Goulet as a worker?
He was all right. He's fun to work with.
I don't have to ask him about office Bernard, right now. Oh, was he?
Yeah. Big time office boy. Now you could ride in the car with him. You know some of the guys smoke. And for a little while there, I did. I'm not talking about funny money, weed either. I'm talking about regular cigarettes. But anyway, he says, I don't like smoking in my car. I thought this ashtray is full of ashes. And I said, oh, you just let the bosses smoke in here, huh? That's the next time you just ride the bosses. I'm not riding your ass no more.
I'm sorry I'm being so quiet. I'm trying to contemplate something here.
Are you? Uh-oh.
Yeah, Bill said he would love to work with Jerry, and Jerry said it would have been fun, and Joe said, yeah. I've been in the ring with all three of them. They must have a real warped sense of what's fun.
Like punishment.
They just need to ask Rip Rogers about Jerry, don't they, Bob?
Did that work with you, Bobby?
No, never worked with you. Just refereed.
Oh.
Just refereed for you guys.
Yeah. What was that deal I pulled up? Oh, yeah, I told him Fields boys or somebody that was a shooter.
Oh, well, you did that with Terry Latham.
Oh, Terry Latham. Terry Latham, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, they didn't know what to do going out that ring. Oaks, I told them that them boys is that they working with big time shooters, and I said they get a little moody too or something, you know.
He told Latham, he said, "Don't let him get behind you." He comes over and tells me, he said, "We're gonna play a rib on him." He said, "When you lock up with him, shoot behind him." So we got there getting the instructions. I said, "What did Turner tell you?" And he said, "He told me you was a shooter." I said, "Man, I can't shoot a gun." I said, "But let's have some fun with Joe." I said, "Let me get behind you."
It's like I done Norville Austin one time there in Mobile. You know, he had a pot belly. And I was walking out of the dressing room, and he's bent over. You know, your belly gets bigger when you're sitting down and bent over. I just stopped, started staring at him. And I said, and he said, "What is it, Turner?" I said, "Oh, nothing." He says, "Come on, man, you're staring at me for some reason. What is it?" I said, "Well, I don't know quite how to ask you this, you know, but, you know, white folks, if they're chubby or fat, they wear black to help hide it." And I said, "I've just wondered, since your skin's already so dark in you, how big your belly really is." He said, "Get out of here and leave me alone." The fun thing about Norville always wore a pair of tights until they just, he'd almost have to step them to him to keep them on him. And they always wore out, because he had such a big rear end, they always wore out at the top of his legs and his butt. The elastic would wear out, and you could run a plumbing snake through there. Except you get, I would get in the ring with him and give him a wedgie every chance I got, because he wore his pants, his tights. So worn out. Jerry, you mentioned Brute Bernard. I know you got some Brute Bernard stories. I've heard some wild things about him too.
Oh, he was something else, man. He was, the Brute was something else. He was always reeked of garlic.
Oh,
always.
Yeah, he was Brute was different. That's all I got to say. You know how ironic is that? Him and Murphy both killed themselves. They was partners for years.
Yeah.
That's ironic, isn't it?
Yep.
Joe,
well,
tell
Brute,
the story.
You didn't want to leave no shaving lotion in the shave lotion in your bag either. You'd drink it. Yeah.
And take all the pills. You had aspirin or anything.
You
take all that out of your bag.
Well, you wouldn't have taken out of my bag at one time.
Yeah. He wrote me one time, he said, "Joe, I think I have a problem with my son." I said, "What is it, Brute?" You know, Brute had them riding horses and barrel racers, you know. And first thing he did when he got them, he talked to some people about with an electric fence, keep them in there without having to build a big fence around this place. They told him, yeah. He said, "But you got to let him know the electric fence is there, and then he'll stay away from it." So, old Brute, he had to ride on his horse. He walks over toward the electric fence, and the horse stops. He wouldn't go any further. And so old Brute's trying to pull him over there to let it shock him. And so the horse kept on his head back, and old Brute, the leverage, he was going to pull him over. He reached over and grabbed the fence himself to pull him.
Where was the Brute from?
Canada.
Montreal.
Canada,
Montreal.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah, yeah.
He had those big old cauliflower ears, and he was at Land TV one Saturday morning, and his right ear, it was as inflamed and red as anything you've ever seen. And he's talking about how bad it was hurting, and I said, let me see it. And I put my, I mean, it was hot to the touch. And I told my man, I said, I think you got that thing infected. And I said, you may need to, you know, get the doctor to look at it or something. So somebody at the TV, and I don't know who it was, somebody started ribbing him. Said, you need to just take a gig and just stick that thing. So you just need to do that and drain it. Said, it'll be all right. So, you know, guys, oh, you don't need to do that. And they went on and on. Well, this went on all day long. We made the loop, and we got to Carrollton that night. We were sitting in the dressing room. And whoever it was started on him again. Said, you just need to stick that thing, you know, whatever. He messed around, and he fixed up a gig, and he stuck himself in the ear. And, son, it hit the ceiling. I've never seen anything like it in my life. And you talk about stink. I mean, it cleared the dressing room out. And after he cleaned the mess up and got his ear, you know, to quit bleeding and stuff, we went back in there, and he said, oh, it feels much better. I should have done that this morning. I mean, he just, you know.
You know his favorite words, I'll say the last half of it, is sucker. And he's always saying that.
Oh, yeah.
When them priests at the Y in Charlotte working out. Anyway, the priest, I forgot what he'd done. He hurt himself. They had to get an ambulance there. I think he busted his ankle or something in there. But they put him on the stretcher, and old Brute's walking alongside him. I told you, you. So-and-so sucker. I told you, you sap sucker. I'm not such a word I'll use. No, you sap sucker, you keep your ass out of here. He kept cussing and everything.
Tell a story about the son, Joe, about where he slapped the son.
Oh, yeah, he had a son, and somebody had told him that he needed to do things with his son, you know, so the father and son deal. So they got out there, and there was, that's what I meant to talk about a while ago, the fence. And they putting up posts, and they, excuse me, they putting up the fence. So he told his son to hit the nail. He held the nail up there. Well, the son hit his hand. Well, he slapped him and called him a sap sucker. And he arrived with me and he says, "Joe, I don't know what to do. They tell me to take time with my son, and I don't know what happened. You know, I hold the nail and tell him to hit it, and he hit my hand. That sap sucker." And I said, "Brute," I said, "what all did you do to him?" He says, "I slapped his ass." Really? I said, "Brute, I think he's 12 years old then." I said, "Brute, he's only 12 years old. And what can you expect out of him?" Brute was driving with me on the trip. I said, "You need to do take up some time with your son, but don't put yourself in that position," more or less. You know, is what I was trying to explain to him. And I said, you know, and so anyway, Brute, he went on again. And so Brute, he put it up there and held the nail again. His son hit his hand again. And I said, "Brute, you didn't slap him, did you?" He said, "No, that sap sucker, I spit in his face and told him, you sap sucker, you." he was crazy.
Brute was all there, was he?
Huh?
He wasn't all there, was he?
No, I don't think so.
You heard about the he was hanging by himself in the backyard.
No, you stretch our necks.
Yeah.
Stretch his neck. And anyway, the mailman came around there and saw him hanging there, and he ran back out truck and called the police. The police came to see if he was killed himself there. But that was just part of his craziness. He also, him and the Marla hated blacks. I hate to say that, but they hated them. And that's all they would talk about, blah, 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 blah. And they were going down the road, and this is a story that was told either Joe was there or, but anyway, they were going down the road and went over this bridge, and there's some blacks fishing there. They stopped the car, turned it around, came back over there, and went on the bridge and grabbed them and threw them off the damn bridge right in the water. They were really crazy over stuff like that.
Did y'all ever work with Skull Murphy?
Do what?
Yes.
Y'all ever work with Skull Murphy?
Oh, yeah. Skull was a pretty good guy.
What kind of work was he?
Now, somebody made a mistake one time. You know, he had his head shaved. He's bald-headed. And they made a mistake in a movie theater one time. He was sitting there at that bald head. His boys sitting behind him. And they started picking at Skull. Reached up there and rubbed his head. And they should have never done that. But they got their butts tore up. Movie theater.
He had some sort of disease, and I don't know what the name of it. He had it since he was a child. He had no body hair whatsoever. He didn't have eyebrows. He didn't have anything. And
well,
he had some sort of
rheumatic fever.
Is that what it was? Yeah. Rheumatic fever that made all of his hair fall out.
Yeah, I think that's what it was.
But you know, he was a man's man as far as, you know, fighting, I guess. But
what kind of worker was he?
I thought he was pretty good. He's a lot better than Brute, I can tell you that.
Oh, yeah.
he was probably no Moose Cholock, though, Jerry.
Oh, I'm sure.
You know, he had a problem, and I believe to this day is reason he committed suicide, is if he went to a town and it was 200 miles away, well, that means it took him 2 hours to drive home. Well, at 10 o'clock, he better get out of that arena because he better be home at 12 o'clock. I mean, he caught hell over that all the time.
Who, Murphy?
Yeah. But anyway, I thought I got along with him good.
That was the same thing with Larry Hamilton. He'd drive 100 miles an hour down the road and then slow it down to 10 or 15 and then back up to 100 miles an hour. Just
100?
Crazy.
I'd ride with him one time, me and Bruce in the back seat. And I wasn't going to drink anything. They stopped in Norfolk and all of them got cases of beer and everything else to bring back from the giant food store because you can buy stuff there. You couldn't get a lot of places. And so I wasn't going to drink anything, and all them three was drinking. And all of a sudden, Larry's doing wide open, and next thing he's doing 30 miles an hour. Next thing he's going wide open. I told him, I said, man, let me drive. He's scaring the hell out of me. I said, let me drive. He said, I can drive my damn car. I said, all right. And he kept doing that, so I looked over at Brute, and I said, Brute, sell me some of them beers. He said, well, what, I thought you weren't going to drink anything. I said, I wasn't. And I said, sell me some beers. He said, what do you want? I said, all you can sell me. I got them beers, and I turned them up fast so I could drink them. I wanted to get the same shit there then so I wouldn't be so scary. And it scared the hell out of me.
That's the only human, well, I've told Michael and Jerry that that's the only human being that I was physically afraid of.
Larry Hamilton?
He scared me. He was as good to me. We never had a cross word. He was a pleasure to be in the ring with as far as working with me and as a referee, and you know, I never had a problem with him. But I was scared of him.
Well, I'll say this for him: he was business. He was strictly business. Now he's if he thought a certain territory like certain things, that's what he went for. He done that.
Yeah.
You know, but, you know, he just him and Jody to me was just a lot different from each other.
Yeah, yeah. He told me He told me one time I asked him, I said, we were talking about something, I don't even remember how I got brought up, or I was talking about Charlie Harbin maybe, and he said the first match he ever had was with George Harbin, Charlie's brother.
Right.
And he said somehow or another, he said he just a kid, didn't really know what he was doing. He said somehow or another he wound up in the ring with George in an upside down bear hug where his head was down, his feet was up. And he said George was hollering at him, "Don't drop me, don't drop me." And he said all he heard was "drop me." and he dropped George on his head. And he said all he could hear was George rolling around on the floor holding his head going, "You fool, you fool, you fool."
Yeah. Yeah. I always got along with Larry pretty good, too, because me and him just, you know, I'd rib him and he didn't care. You know, just, but of course, in Carolinas, I think I rib more up there than I did anywhere else. I always had something going on there.
Well, guys, we got one more special caller here, and I want to get him on the line with us. The unofficial mayor of Loganville, Georgia, Charlie Smith.
Yeah, how y'all doing? How's everybody doing? Glad you're back, sir.
Thank you, sir. Good to be back. Yeah, I've missed doing the show, but I need something to get me a little bit of sanity in my life right now. I'm about to go nuts.
I know you are. You ought to get on the road, don't you, sir?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. I want to get, well, more important than getting on the road is getting out of Mobile, Alabama.
Well, have you heard anything yet, sir?
No, I'm meeting with my attorney tomorrow, so hopefully I'll know a little more than I know right now. So I'll be able to announce something next Thursday night when we're back on the air. How's Charlene doing?
Well, she was asleep when we left the hospital. You know, they took her uterus out or something, and it was all right. They thought they could send it off, and she's a diabetic, they said. And they did an MIR on her, so hadn't heard nothing from that yet. Be tomorrow, probably. Louise's been worried to death about her. Well, I have too. And I appreciate everybody thinking about her.
Oh, we certainly are.
Ain't nothing like your daughter. Well, there ain't nothing like children.
Well, you're absolutely right there. Absolutely right.
Charlie.
Yes, sir.
We love you, pal.
Love you, Bill. Joe.
Bye.
Go ahead.
Yeah. Yeah. We're telling Brute Bernard's story. Charlie, tell us a Brute Bernard story.
I don't know. I can't remember when Scott Murphy killed himself. 1961.
Who's that?
I don't
remember what year it was.
Brute,
it was
later than the 60s.
Yeah, no, Brute died in 75, 76, something like that. Maybe even later than that.
It
was later than that because I worked with him in 78 in the Carolinas.
Okay. Yeah, it was later, yeah.
Let's go.
Hey. Let me tell you all the story about Charlie Smith. I was driving my shuttle the other day, and there was a couple of black dudes on there from Atlanta, Georgia, and they're talking about wrestling. I said, yeah, well, I've done that. And I said, I got a lot of friends up there in Atlanta. And I said, probably one y'all know, Charlie Smith. They said, did he wrestle? And I said, no, he refereed. He said, that ain't that real skinny guy. And he said, I said, not no more. He says, yep, didn't he used to be skinny? And I said, yeah. He says, yeah, that's that one when he stands sideways, sticks his tongue out and looks like a zipper. I said, that's him.
Well, Michael, I'm glad you're back, sir. I'm going to go ahead and talk.
All right, Charlie. Appreciate it, man.
Tell your wife, Charlie, we all ask about her, Charlie.
right, baby. Thank God.
Right. Talk to you later, brother.
Bye-bye.
I'll give you a quick Brute Bernard story. We're in Columbus, Georgia. Jerry, you remember in Columbus how that bale old Carlisle used? It was built on a block of wood.
Right.
Brute was working with Austin Idle. And I can't remember if he was Austin Idle or Mike McCord. I can't remember what the deal was at the time. But the Brute got that bale and hit him. And, son, he knocked him in the next week. And he was laying on his back staring up at the lights. And I kind of pushed Brute back, and I went over and I was kind of hitting him on the side of the face. And I finally got him to come around a little bit, and they messed around. Finally, he got his wits back. Finally, when he started making his comeback, he hit the Brute, and the Brute went through the ropes to go toward the floor or on the apron or whatever he was going to do. And on that ring in Columbus, that old boxing ring, there was some little metal stobs that stuck up that held the boards in place. The Brute hooked his trunks on that metal stob as he was on the way down, and he was hanging by his feet upside down with his butt shining. And all he could scream was, "Monsieur, Monsieur, help, Monsieur." And we were all laughing so hard we couldn't help him. And Gary Hart was his manager, and of course Gary was, you know, herbally medicated at the time. And it was interesting. When Gary Hart brought Brute Bernard into Atlanta, the first 2 weeks he was here, me and Ronnie West bled more than the wrestlers did. He was beating the crap out of us and leaving us bloody every night. Last thing I'd be laying on the mat bleeding, and the last thing I'd see is Gary would holler at him, "Do the crab." Did you ever see him get on his back and do the crab? Where he'd lay on his back and just kick all fours. It was...
I've never seen him do that.
The best thing I ever heard Jerry, the best description I've ever heard of the Brute, I think Jerry had tonight. He was different.
The short terms, that covers it. That's for sure.
Really?
Yeah. I'd hate to see them put Jerry Graham and him together.
Oh, geez.
Can you imagine? Well, you're talking about Billy Hines, how much he drank. Can you imagine a carload with Jerry Graham, Sputnik Monroe, Billy Hines, and Don Fargo in it?
Come on, Sputnik Monroe. Y'all remember whenever the movie stars, you know, they always kiss the women and all that stuff when they greet them?
Yeah.
And do you remember one time when they tried that deal where the men would kiss the men? It's many years ago. Anyway... Sputnik Monroe seen that. So one night I dropped him off, and he went out of the trunk, got his bag out and handed it to him. That sucker kissed me. I pushed him back. I said, "What the hell do you think you're doing? We've been to do it on TV and everything now." I said, "I don't care what to do on TV. You don't do that shit to me."
Well, guys, we got about 2 minutes left, and so we're going to wrap it up here real quick. Bill and Joe, as always, it's always great to have you guys on, and I couldn't think of a better way to come back my first show back and to have you guys on. And thank Charlie Smith and thank Bo for joining us as well. And
I just got another text from Bo. It said 79. He's like a walking encyclopedia.
Well, he's probably got the bullet that he killed himself with.
Well, the gun and the CSI reports. And
were they dusted for fingerprints?
Look, give me 30 seconds. This is for Bill Bowman talking about my sweet, lovely wife. I'll tell y'all how she treats me. I'm on the way to work one morning here in Atlanta, and I make a little turn up in Little Five Points by this little park where a bunch of the homeless people sleep at night. And I get there, man, and they got crime tapes swung around the thing there, and there's a body on the park bench, and they got it covered up, and the cops got all the entrances blocked with a blue light. So I called home and I told Debbie, I said, somebody's dead in this park. I said, you reckon if I stopped and walk up there and told them I was with the CSI team, they'd let me go up there and see who's dead? And Debbie goes, no, Bobby. I said, walk up there and tell them you're part of the NAH team. And I said, Debbie, what's the NAH team? She said, just go up there and tell them you nosy as hell, they'll let you see. So.
Hey, let me tell you guys something right quick. They had a health seminar and they was talking about food that you eat and what's good for you and what's bad for you and why you shouldn't eat this and what would help you. And so at the end of it, the guy says, now who in this audience can tell me a food that if you eat it, it'll have a bad effect on you the rest of your life? Old man in the back room stood up and raised his hand. He says, wedding cake.
It'll work.
Kathy must not be in the room. She's in there sharpening up the blades on those skates. You better watch out.
Yeah.
Well, guys, I appreciate you joining us tonight. And Bobby and Jerry, we'll get together next Thursday and do this again. Again, thanks, Charlie, and thanks to Bo for joining us as well. So
we're glad you're back, man.
Thank you. And I'm glad to be
Bobby,
back.
Bobby, I'm going to give you a call.
We love
Bobby,
you.
I'm going to give you a call.
Okay.
All right.
We love you guys.
Guys, right. Thanks a lot. We'll see you guys next week. All right. Bye-bye.
All right. Bye. Have a good one. All right. Bye-bye.
We thank you for listening to this broadcast, a production brought to you by GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com and the GWH Radio Network. Stay tuned to GWH for nostalgia, upcoming events, and more. As always, GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com thanks you for your continued support.